Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, football picks up a third straight win. Basketball season is officially upon us. Volleyball's right in the thick of conference play. They were on the road this past week. Cross country gearing up for the conference championships. So a lot of stuff going on. But we're going to spend a lot of our time today talking men's golf. Coach Mike Hagan and the 37th ranked Red Wolves finished the fall by winning their final three tournaments. They went to the St. Mary's Invitational in Monterey, California this past week and finished first out of 16 teams. It's just the third time in school history that the Red Wolves have won three tournaments in a row. The individual medalist in that event was Jake Wallace. He shot 12 under, 7 under on the final day, final round of 65. And the sophomore from Leeds, England joins us in studio today. Hello, Jake.
Thanks for having me.
Man, it's great to have you in studio. So, first off, I want to go back to last week in California. You had the final round 65, but you eagle two of the final three holes. So, what was that day like? What was it like to go to California and win that tournament?
Yeah, it was great. The final day, I knew I had a shot of winning. There was me and Thomas Schmidt as well on the team that both were up there. And then heading into the back nine, I knew I had a little bit of a lead. And I managed to hole out with my second shot on 16. So
from?
That was very nice.
From how far?
From 100 yards.
Wow.
So that helped settle the nerves coming down the stretch a little bit. So that was nice. And then finished it off by eagling the par five last. Hit it to like 4 foot with my second shot, so that was a nice way to finish.
What's amazing right now is just what the team is doing as a whole. Now, you mentioned Thomas Schmidt finished runner-up in that event. I'm going to throw out some numbers at you here. The team completes the fall with a scoring average of 278.6. That's nearly 7 shots better than the program record, which was set last year. But you, Thomas Schmidt, Milan Reed, and Jake Lyle all had fall scoring averages under par. And over the team's three tournament win streak, we had the individual medalist in all three events, and they were three different players. Thomas Schmidt won in Colorado, Milan Reed won the Bubba Barnett, and you win in California. So how are you guys pushing each other right now to get better?
Oh, we've got a really talented group of lads. I mean, when we're practicing, it's all about competition and pushing each other to get better. And obviously, it's showing in the events we're playing. You know, we're pushing to win, not just as a team, but individually. And obviously, winning three in a row, both individually and as a team, is pretty special.
Yeah, I want to talk about kind of the mental approach there, especially get to the last round. And obviously, winning the team event is job one, but it's all your individual performances to do that. But let's say if it's the Bubba Barnett, where sometimes you guys may be in the 1, 2, 3, 4, or here where you go in the last day, you know, it was Thomas you chased down. Kind of what's that like mentally when you're trying to win as a team, but you're trying to track down your teammate or teammates and win the individual medal?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we all, at the end of the day, would love to beat each other. Kind of a nice rivalry that we've all got in the team, which also means that the team does better. We're all happy for each other when we all do well, because that's what we're here for. But yeah, the better we do individually, right, the better the team does, I guess. So.
Yeah, because it's not like if it's somebody else, let's say if you're trying to chase down somebody from another school, you can go, well, I hope that guy makes some bogeys coming in. But when it's your teammate, you don't want him making bogeys coming in. So like, you just got to hope he plays good and you play better.
Yeah.
Whoever it is.
You're just hoping that you go out and make some birdies and you beat them. You don't want them to fall away, because obviously that has a negative impact on the team. But yeah, it's just hoping that everyone plays well and the best man wins.
All right, I want to hear your story. So we mentioned You're from Leeds, England. Tell us about Leeds. What kind of town is that?
It's just a fairly average city in England. It's fairly well populated. We've got a good football team that I support, which is nice.
Now, when you say football, of course.
Soccer, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it's, Leeds United.
Leeds United.
Yep.
Yeah. What league is that?
The Premier League.
Oh.
Yeah, so they're pretty good, so yeah.
How far is the stadium from your house?
It's about 20, 30 minutes away. So I try and get to a few games when I can, when I'm at home.
Now, was soccer or football your first love, or was it golf from the start?
No, growing up, I had a pretty equal liking for both. I played a lot of football. That was probably my main sport for most of my childhood. And then when I was probably like 13 or 14, I decided that golf was going to be the path I took.
How'd you get into golf?
Yeah. My dad and my granddad, they both played growing up, so I used to just go to the golf course with those two and take a club and chip around. Just slowly grew my love for the game and eventually started playing properly and started playing competitions, and it just grew from there, really.
How many golf courses are around the house?
We've got a few. There's quite a few in a sort of 10, 15-minute drive. So it's a good area for golf.
Now, when I think golf in England, I'm thinking links-style golf. So is everything around there links courses?
No, around me it's a little bit more parkland. There's a hint of the links in it. Most courses, I think, in England, just because that's what we're known for. But there's a bunch of good links courses not too far away that I'll play a lot. But the courses around me are more tree-lined and a little bit more inland. But I get to play a good amount of both.
You guys went home and you played in events over the summer. In fact, there were times looked up and you had A-State guys playing against each other in match play. But I say all that to say, so you go home in summer, you're playing big events. You played any of the Rota courses? Tell me your favorite course over there you've played.
This summer, I played Royal St. George's, which is that's on the open rota. So that place is really special. I played Royal Liverpool as well. That's the same on that's on the open rota as well. So those two places are really cool places to go.
So still got the old course on the bucket list then?
No, in fact, yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah,
I forgot about it.
Yeah, I played that one at the start of my summer. That was a very cool place to go to, just the history of it.
When you forget you played St. Andrews, you played too much golf.
Yeah.
All right, you mentioned your dad and your grandpa got you into golf. Tell us about your family.
My mom and dad have both grew up where I live now, and they both work. And
what do they do?
My dad currently works for an online retailer back home, and my mum works in a bank, so they both work like regular 9-to-5. They've done a lot to get me where I am, so I'm very proud of my family.
So at what point in a young man's development, you said, you know, 13, 14, you decide probably going to be golf over football, and I'm sure at one point, and still the end goal is professional golf, but at what point, like, do you start thinking about this detour across the ocean to come to America and play college golf?
Yeah, probably 15, 16. That's when we finished school back home, sort of looking towards what I wanted to do. And professional golf is the aim, and I think this stands out as the best way of getting to where I want to be. Obviously, the opportunity over here is so much greater than at home. We have the summer, and then you can't really play any golf. Not competitively anyway, so this is the best way to be able to do as much as I can and prepare myself for the next steps.
So you were thinking about college golf, coming to the United States and playing college golf before you heard about Arkansas State.
Yeah, it's something I've wanted to do for a long time. So I always knew that I wanted to be over here, but I didn't know where.
All right, so let's get to that part. When did you first hear from Mike Hagan, and what was your first exposure to A-State?
It was probably my last year of school. We sort of got put in touch with each other and sent a few emails and had a few calls, and obviously we got to know each other, and he ran me through sort of the workings of A-State and everything that we've got here and the program and the history, and it just went from there to, you know, I felt like this would be a great place to call home. And, yeah, I love it here so far.
So I'm going to ask you sort of two things about Coach Hagan. Number one, you know, as a recruit, and, you know, Arkansas State, I'm sure, not the only school that called. So ultimately, like, the coach is a big part of the reason you're going to travel halfway across the world. So what made Coach Hagan the guy to come play for?
We got along really well as soon as we spoke, and obviously he said a lot of good things, and he's got a very good record behind him. He's proven to be a very good coach, and he's just, yeah, we get along really well, and it just seemed like the perfect.
And then beyond his ability to go find guys like you, and because eventually, I mean, ultimately you want to have the best players. So besides being able to go get the best players, once you guys are here and you're actually putting in the work, what makes him good there? Because, I mean, the guy's in multiple halls of fame already. So just strictly when the team's together and it's practice or it's in a tournament or whatever, like, what's the secret sauce? What makes him good at that part?
I think he's very good. You know, we have structured practices, and he, you know, takes our input to what we think as well. And we always have a plan in place whenever we're practicing or at tournaments. We always know what we need to be doing at any time, which is, I think, a big key.
What was your parents' reaction to coming overseas?
My mum was slightly upset when I left, but it's something I've always mentioned and always wanted to do, so I think they were slightly more prepared for seeing me go, but they were both upset when I left, but they know that this is what I've wanted to do and I'm following my dreams, so they've been very supportive of it.
We ask this almost any time one of our international student-athletes come in here, so question goes two ways. What's the food you love to eat at home that you can't get here?
Fish and chips.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
And then we'll flip it around. Now, what's the thing now you love to eat here that you won't be able to get when you go home?
Barbecue. We don't do as much barbecue, and I think that's
okay.
Really good here. Yeah.
Are you a brisket guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like... Yeah. All right, so here, there's all kinds of places you can go get catfish, and they've all got french fries. Why is that not fish and chips? Like, why is that the thing you pick? What's the difference?
Well, the chips are just, they're, like, thicker, and they're, like, bigger. And then the fish is, like, I don't know. I've never seen anywhere do it like we do it. There's just something about it.
All right, so you came in last year as a freshman. You were named Sun Belt Conference Freshman of the Year. So, able to have some immediate success as soon as you get to Arkansas State, did that surprise you that you were able to kind of have success right away?
Yeah, I mean, coming in, my aims were just to make the team and be traveling with the team and do my part to hopefully see team success. And then as the year went on, I was having a pretty good year, and, you know, people started talking about the possibility of awards like that. And yeah, it was a nice surprise to end the year to get some success in that department.
I tell you to close your eyes right now, because you said playing professionally is the aim. So you close your eyes, you're playing in a tournament. Is that on the PGA Tour or is that on the DP World Tour that you're playing in your head right now?
The end goal is the PGA Tour.
Yep.
I will probably go home, I think, to start and do things in Europe, but the end goal is to be back out here and playing on the PGA Tour.
I want to kind of look at the more immediate future right now. So you got a few months. This team's playing incredible right now. We went through all the numbers, just how great the fall was. It was record-setting. You end the fall on a 3-tournament win streak as a team. You're coming off an individual medalist honor. So March, I'm sure, seems like a long way away. What are you going to do between now and then? Obviously, you're going to practice a lot, but how do you prepare yourself for the spring season and ultimately trying to win a Sun Belt championship?
Yeah, we've got a plan for the off season and how we're all going to sort of maintain where we are. And then when it comes back around to sort of that January, February time, when we'll probably kick things back up again a little bit more and get things going again. And, you know, we're all going to get to spend some time at home for the Christmas. And I think that'll be good for everyone to just have a nice reset.
And so you are going back home for Christmas.
Yeah, I'm going back home and spend some time with family and just have a little bit of time away and come back and get going again and try and win some more tournaments.
So who's your favorite golfer?
My favorite golfer is probably Tommy Fleetwood.
Okay. Who do you think you play the most like? or somebody tried to pattern something off of.
I like the way, like, Rory McIlroy plays. I think hits it far, straight, which helps.
Those are two good things to try to copy.
There's aspects of a few people that I'd like to copy, and if I got as good as them at them, I'd be very happy.
So what's it like on the team, the A-State team, during the Ryder Cup? Because you got American guys, you got European guys. What's that weekend like?
That was fun this year. It was a good little bit of rivalry on the team. We only have two Americans this year, so there was a little bit more bias towards the Europeans. So that was nice for us. But yeah, it was fun to watch as a team with people from everywhere. It was good fun.
Well, tell you, you know what, Jake? Maybe my favorite player on the team.
Why is that?
Because he doesn't play in a medium polo. And I love that. No, but I get tired. I mean, I like guys wear something bigger than a medium. I'm happy for you. You get tired of seeing them skinny guys out there. It's different. I mean, good. You're like my hero.
What's your favorite thing about being here at Arkansas State, Jack?
The group of guys we've got on the team. We have such a good time on and off the golf course. We get on so well together, and it's just good to be a part of it. The vibes and everything of the team is just really good.
Well, Jake, it's really good to have you here at A-State. Thanks for coming in today, man. This has been a lot of fun. Congratulations on a great fall, and good luck as you get ready for the spring.
Thank you.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same: you first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
And we welcome you back into the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by Kavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Kavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at KavanaughCars.com.
Now, let me tell you something before we shift gears here.
Go ahead.
Go back to say, part of the reason I say Jake so makes me so happy that somebody on that team wears something larger than a medium polo. Like, I patted him on the back as he walked out the door here a minute ago. He's a solid dude. Like, he's a big, strong guy. I get tired of it. I want to see that guy do well. Because I get tired of Hagan. I tell him all the time, Hagan brings in here. They all wear, medium shirts. Nobody wears, gets slacks with a waist size bigger than 28, and they hit it 400 yards. I hate those dudes.
Yeah, a little bit more relatability with a guy like Jake. So
I like it. Yeah, I mean, I like it. Yeah, plus, it never did me any good to ever go ask Hagan for any apparel because he never had anything in a size remotely close to I could wear. So I need him recruiting guys that have a range of sizes.
Let's talk football. They've got a range of sizes on that team.
They do.
They've won three in a row now. Homecoming this past Saturday. A very rainy homecoming. What was it, about a 20, 30% chance of rain going in, and it was a steady rain all night long.
Pretty much not long after kickoff, huh?
You don't see Butch Jones wear a hat very often, but he was wearing a hat. I asked him the last time he did it. He wore a cap for part of the game against South Alabama last year when it was raining at home, but outside of that, he really doesn't remember wearing a hat during a game.
I knew Coach Jones was sitting on go. So I will kind of go behind the curtain a little
bit.
I knew before this game ever rolled around to start, and I just knew that he was amped up and ready to go. Because at one point, that actually we were kind of prepared for Red Wolf Walk to actually start, even though we kept saying 3:45. We really thought it was going to start at 3:50. And then all of a sudden, they were running ahead of schedule. Like, they actually wanted to get there sooner than 3:45. And I said, all right, there's sign number one. They would do the Red Wolf Walk. They make this circle on the field. He's in the middle of the circle sooner than I've ever seen him get in it. Like, all right.
Yeah.
He's early for the Red Wolf Walk. He can't wait to get in the middle of the circle. And then, everything's timed out at the before the pregame. And, the intro video plays. And usually the intro video plays. And then that's the time where we got a camera up in the tunnel and can pick them up, as they're leaving the locker room. Well, the intro video finishes. And I look down and they're all standing there. I'm like, he can't wait to go. So all those things put together, and all the signs were there that he was amped up and ready to get this one underway.
The game didn't get off to necessarily a good start. Georgia Southern actually won the toss. They took the ball. They drove down. They looked really good on their opening drive. And we get the ball right back, and we drive down the field. Had a really good-looking drive, but an interception at the goal line. And then Georgia Southern marches all the way downfield. They score again, and you're thinking, oh, it's 14 to nothing with about 4 minutes to go in the first quarter, and this team didn't show any signs of panic. There were two first-half turnovers, but everybody just kept their eyes where they needed to. And I thought where the Red Wolves won this game was at the end of the first half and the beginning of the second half. The Red Wolves drove 14 plays and 91 yards on the final drive of the second quarter, and it ended with a touchdown. Got you back to within four at the intermission, and then you got the ball first in the second half, and you go on a 13-play drive to begin the second half. So there's 27 plays right there. They had a kneel down at the end of the second quarter. That was their only play in between. But, I mean, the defense wasn't on the field for a long time. And in the meantime, it's a 14-point swing. And when you score on that opening drive of the third quarter, you take the lead for good. And I thought, really, that's where everything turned.
Yeah. I go back to all my years doing women's basketball with Brian Boyer. And way back in, he kind of came up under a coach that always talked about the importance of the last 4 minutes of the first half and the first 4 minutes of the second half. That's basketball. But, same thing here.
Same thing here.
When it works like that. And it also goes back to, the conversation you and Coach Jones have had a couple times lately about when you win the toss and decide to take the ball. Now, they scored. So, it wasn't like that turned out to be a bad decision. But then, you're giving it up to start the second half. And all of a sudden, you've given up a score to close the first half, and you're giving the ball up to start the second half. And those are two key stretches that went the Red Wolves' way.
We moved at a really quick pace offensively Saturday. Ran 85 plays despite having the ball 3.5 minutes less than they did. We ran 19 more plays, so that kind of tells you just what a quick pace we were going at. And the Red Wolves go 11 of 18 on third down. That was huge. Hold them to 5 for 14 on third down. And the run game was really key in this one. The team rushed for a season-high 266 yards. Jalen Rayner with 3 rushing touchdowns. The first Red Wolf quarterback since Freddie Knighton to score 3 rushing touchdowns in a game. That was back in 2014 when Freddie did it. And then the running backs were fantastic. Kenyon Clay rushes for 124 yards and a touchdown. And Devin Spencer, the sophomore, runs for 123. It's the first time that A-State has had two rushers go over 100 yards since 2016 when Warren Wand and Johnston White, remember old Silky?
Yep.
They did it in the same game. But you're going back 9 years since the last time that happened. And how about the play by Kenyon Clay on the final drive for the Red Wolves after Georgia Southern had kicked the field goal to get to within 7? The Red Wolves are trying to burn as much time as they can. They need to pick up a first down. He picks up 30 yards, and he slides down inbounds,
yep,
forcing Georgia Southern to call a timeout.
Heads-up play, situational awareness. Human nature is to either fight like heck to keep going and go score, or in the process of doing that, get knocked out of bounds. He didn't either. And yeah, it's just good instincts and good coaching to have those guys kind of know the situation, in the heat of the moment. It's not easy to do.
They practice that every week. And Butch Jones brought it up that a month ago in practice, Kenyon Clay ran out of bounds on that. And he was furious at that point. And Kenyon learned his lesson. And he said he was more proud of that play than any other the other night. And he should have been. I thought that play was absolutely huge. And we're sitting here talking about the offense, but the defense gave up just 3 points in the second half. And after Georgia Southern had those two impressive drives to start the game, I thought the A-State defense really controlled things the rest of the way. 4 sacks on the night. DeMarcus Hendricks had a couple. And Brandon Grile had that huge sack on third down that forced a 3 and out late in the third quarter that was also huge.
Yeah, it's funny that defense, you've seen it before where they'll give up something early and then all of a sudden just kind of shut the door, making all these comparisons like we did a while ago. But, you know, they're great pitchers, and I can remember it seems like, you know, Tom Glavine was one, or different, you know, Hall of Fame pitchers along the way. They'd talk about, if you're going to get them, you better get them early. The A-State defense has had a little bit of that in them at times where they've given some stuff up early in games and then completely flipped the script, and a Saturday was sure one of those.
You know how much we love Ryan Applin, and Darian Griswold and I made sure to go down and see App before the game the other night, and we got to hug him and visit with him for a few minutes, and App's doing a great job. But, man, our offensive coordinator was fantastic the other night. I thought Keith Eckendorf called one heck of a game, and it was fun to watch that A-State offense work. And, look, they're playing really well in every phase right now. 3 wins in a row. They're 4-4 overall, 3-1 in conference play. Just one game behind the two teams that are currently tied for first, and those are your two opponents in the next 2 weeks, beginning this Saturday, 7 o'clock at Troy, a Troy team that's already bowl eligible. They're 6-2 overall, 4-0 in conference play. The two most successful teams in the history of the Sun Belt. I always look forward to the Red Wolves and Trojans. I mean, you know as well as anybody, just the kind of games we've seen over the years.
Every type. Shootouts, slugfests, 9-3 or whatever, 13-9.
I remember 9-3 in 2005. I think that was the first ever meeting.
It's been all kinds. And so, yeah, it's always fun to see these two get together. And honestly, kind of the way it's meant to be with these two teams playing, you know, first Saturday in November, and a game that's really important to both teams.
Of course, that'll be huge, and then the following week will be huge as well. It was announced Monday that the Southern Miss game next week is an 11 a.m. kick, so an early start time. When was the last time we had an 11 a.m. kick at home?
I don't know. I don't know if Mark Taylor went and looked that up or not, but, yeah, 11 a.m. kick at the Vault. So, you know, change your tailgate menu, omelets, bacon.
We'll have an 8:45 Red Wolf walk.
Yep, 8:45 Red Wolf walk, and that's going to be Heroes Day. The giveaway is really cool that day. Barton's has provided us 1,000, I would call them the digital camouflage caps that have the A-State logo on the front that have the stars and stripes inside it for Heroes Day. So those will be popular. They need to get in, get in and cheer, make some noise for an 11 a.m. kick, and then have the rest of your afternoon. Go watch football, do whatever you want to do.
So two big weeks ahead. The bottom line is this team is in control of its own destiny.
Right.
Going into the month of November.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Volleyball, they split their matches at Troy last week. Lost in four sets on Thursday, came back 1-4 sets on Friday. Coach Gerwig's team now sitting at 14-7 on the year. They're 7-3 in conference play, and they got a couple of big home matches this week. They're hosting the Cajuns Friday at 6, then Saturday at 1.
One game back in the division against a South Alabama team we've not faced yet, so everything is big. You mentioned being at home this weekend. Of course, Friday night is Halloween. We'll do some things inside First National Bank Arena. So if you still want to bring your family and watch some volleyball, kids in a costume, get in free Friday night. We're going to do some trick-or-treating inside the bank. You probably have a costume contest. So you can multitask. You can come do your Halloween stuff while cheering on A-State volleyball Friday night.
Want to hit some other sports real quick. Women's golf finishing 11th out of 17 teams at the Diamante Intercollegiate. That was played in Hot Springs Village. That was the final event of the fall. Soccer lost at Old Dominion Friday, 3-0. They'll finish up the regular season Wednesday at 4 as they host Coastal Carolina. Cross country, Carlo Jaramillo Martinez was named Sunbelt Conference Men's Runner of the Week after his career-best performance at the Arturo Barrios Invitational in College Station. So congratulations to Carlo. He and the rest of the team will be at the Sunbelt Championships this Friday. That'll be in Foley, Alabama.
Expect the Red Wolves to be in the mix.
Always are. The sixth-ranked bowling team, they were in Orlando this past weekend. They finished 16th at the Destination Orlando event. They're going to be back in action coming up November 7th through the 9th. That'll be at the Bulldog Classic in Fort Worth.
So I would bet you that you're keeping up. I'm guessing that's the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs.
It is.
Hosting that in their home lanes in Fort Worth.
In Fort Worth.
And I'm not even...
It's amazing how many... Yeah. Bowling tournaments are like that.
And golf has gotten that way. You know, we've hosted or co-hosted events in Vegas the last couple of years in men's golf. So, I mean, that's no knock. It's just always funny to read those things.
And that leads us to basketball. Basketball season is officially upon us. The men ended up playing an open scrimmage against Tennessee Martin on Sunday. Won that game 76-59. Saw some good things. Defense looked good. They held Martin to 33% shooting. They out-rebounded the Skyhawks by 18. So defense and rebounding. Coach Pannone said after the game, first thing he said to me was, that's the fewest points I've scored in a long time, 76. But there are some good things to build on, and certainly looking forward to seeing the Ryan Pannone era begin officially. Coming up Monday night, we'll be in Athens, Ohio, as the Red Wolves take on Ohio, 6 o'clock tip.
Yeah, it's just interesting. Like, you know, people ask, and people who weren't able to go to the scrimmage, obviously I saw, were asking about it. I was like, you know, who knows? Like, this is what I know about this team. No matter how good they're playing to start the year, they're going to get better. Even if they come out Monday night and play like world beaters, they're still going to get better. This still is a staff and a team that have hardly never been together.
I thought it was interesting. Did you notice this during the scrimmage? Our new buddy, Dean Cooper, who was on with us a couple of weeks ago, I was looking for him on the bench, and I was looking at the coaches. I'm like, where's Dean at? And then I look in the middle of the players.
Yep.
He sat right in the middle of the players on the bench the other day. I don't think I've ever seen that before from an assistant coach.
Well, it's a couple of different
things. I don't know if that's his thing or not. I haven't asked him about it.
Yeah, but I do think, I mean, it makes sense to me, I mean, to be down there and amongst the players. That's who they're wanting to talk to on the bench. So I mean, I did see that, actually. I thought, you know, it kind of checks out. There's only so many people that can be sitting up around the end by Coach Pannone. Sometimes you need somebody down there in the trenches talking to the dudes.
Well, the way it is with college basketball now, they allow for more assistants yep. than they ever have. There's five full assistants on this staff. So I guess you can spread them out a
right.
little bit on that
yeah,
bench.
Yeah, that's right. So I did see that too. I thought it was interesting and probably valuable, I would imagine.
Meanwhile, the women host Henderson State in an exhibition game that's coming up Tuesday at 7. If you're listening on Tuesday when this comes out, it'll be tonight, 7 o'clock at First National Bank Arena. And then the women will be home again to open up the regular season coming up on Monday night, 7 o'clock tip against Ball State.
So a lot of stuff happening. Well, let me talk about Monday night a little bit. Obviously, season opener, Sunbelt MAC Challenge. I don't know why they call it the MAC Sunbelt Challenge. It's the Sunbelt MAC Challenge.
Yes.
Now you get two teams, you'll both pick the top or near the top of those respective leagues. So you got a big-time matchup. It's going to be ring ceremony for A-State right before tip. So celebrate last year's championship. And it's going to be a whiteout. Everybody, the whole lower bowl is going to be full of white T-shirts. And you can get to that game for $1.
Wow.
So you're going to get a free shirt for a game you can get into for $1.
Well, you got every reason in the world to go to the game.
Right.
And why not? I mean, this team is so exciting to watch, and I think they're just going to build on what they did last year.
Oh, I do too. May or may not have had one of their super secret scrimmages. I know they did, but I didn't see it. Heard a little bit of feedback from how they played. Now, I'm looking forward to, as we're recording this, I'm looking forward to seeing them Tuesday night, and then certainly, yeah, hopefully everybody will come out and see them. Like I said, the whole point is to really blow this thing out Monday night, wide out, $1. Championship celebration, big-time opponent, you know, great matchup, all the things you could ask for in place Monday night.
All right, anything else we need to talk about here?
Just a busy weekend. I mean, just a run of busy weekends. Like, we've got more of our athletes competing right now than you probably do at any point in the year, because you're also playing some fall baseball. Coach Silva, he was surprised to hear the other day, we told him, we don't think we ever hosted a fall baseball game against another team. I don't remember it.
I don't either.
And so ULM's coming up here Saturday, and they're going to play a couple of baseball games at the Tom on Slayton Family Field. They're going to start that at 11 o'clock, and they'll go a while. So, you know, even you come in for volleyball, there'd still be plenty of baseball to catch, I think, when volleyball ends. So there's baseball going too, playing their fall season. Like, you look, practically every sport we got, especially if you go back a week ago when golfs were still going, we had nearly every team in action. It's a crazy time of year.
Thanks again to Jake Wallace for coming in. Appreciate our buddy Mark Taylor for setting that up for us. A lot of good stuff going on right now, and we'll talk about all of it when we come back for our next edition next week of our Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and the Cavanaugh Auto Group.